No, wait, wait, wait. Henley's turn. Henley's turn. Ooh. Hold on. Hold on. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh my God.
You guys did it.
Wow.
Wow.
Welcome back to Hot Marriage, Cool Parents. We are here with a very nauseous and sick and tired Jamie Hayner.
I love you guys.
And you might be wondering why we are, well, you are you still? No,
no,
you're not.
I took off
why
my
I'm
dress.
Dressed so, up for this.
Yeah, we don't usually wear, I took my dress off as fast as I could. The minute I got in the house, I was like, off the dress, off the bra, like off the underwear.
I kept it on. I like being sandy. I don't know.
We just got back from the beach.
Yeah, we had our gender reveal today.
Yes.
And very surprising.
Very surprising, actually. Actually, I don't know. Is it that surprising?
Not really. I mean, it was 50-50.
Yeah, it was kind of 50-50.
It was one or the other. I mean, and so there's a lot of mystery behind this. So first of all, we got there and it was a phenomenal setup. Like absolutely beautiful setup. Do you want to give a shout out to the setup person?
Yeah, I do. I want to give a shout out to Posh Picnic in Sarasota.
Unreal.
Like
unreal.
Really amazing. And then obviously I just want to give a big shout out to Ruth because she was so kind. She said, "Do you want to keep this a surprise and you just show up and you don't have to do anything?" And I was like, "That sounds fabulous. Like don't ask no more."
Sign us up.
And she really did. Like she was in touch with Kirsten from Posh Picnic and Kirsten was amazing. She like Ruth was telling me that when Ruth was like, "I'm not sure where do we go for a videographer and a photographer?" She set us up with a great videographer from, you know, I don't want to butcher anyone's name. So let me just pull out.
I know it was Brian.
Yeah, Brian. But I want to get like his whole
and
business.
Kiara.
No, it's Caitlin.
Caitlin was the photographer, but yeah, Brian was the videographer and his wife.
Oh,
Kiara.
Is his wife Kiara? Okay. Mm. Yeah. Okay.
And I'm usually horrible with names.
Yeah. I'm usually the better one with names. But I remember meeting her and she's so sweet. They have a 1-year-old child. But anyways, needless to say, huge shout out to Kirsten from Posh Picnic and then Brian Rondon from BR Focus Films and then Caitlin Torres from Caitlin Torres Photography. And I don't know. It sounds like we're like... But, that might be just a bit much, but I just wanted to give them a shout out because it just, our gender reveal turned out so beautifully.
And if you want to watch it, it's actually up on YouTube.
Yes. It's up on YouTube.
Yeah. We did our gender reveal and we did it on the beach. It was from 4:30 to 6:00, but we actually stayed there to watch the sunset.
Yeah.
The gender reveal part happened about 5:10 or so.
5:30. Yeah. So I was telling everyone on Instagram, like anyone who had subscribed, we were going to go live. And so we went live at 5:00 just to kind of make sure that it was working and that everything was going to like move, like go smoothly. The wind was just out of control.
Nuts.
You know, you can't control that, so we went live. And then, so yeah, if you want to see like the raw live footage, then you could subscribe to my Instagram. I'd love to have you. I absolutely love my subscribers.
Yeah. So we had like a big table picnic set up. There was charcuterie. little things set up and it was a whole beehive theme. So
yeah.
Which kids it going to be or something like that. Or?
It's a he or she, what will babies be?
Oh, right.
That's what it was.
And yeah.
It was
so
really
they,
cute.
And they had like little party favors of like little honey things and a honeycomb stick.
Really
it was
thought
really
of everything. And it
unbelievable.
Was beautiful. Someone goes, "Is there a wedding?"
I know.
And I was like, "Oh no, I'm pregnant with twins. It's our gender reveal."
So we show up and obviously Ruth and the picnic are pretty much set up. And all we're looking at is this big white board that's covered with a bed sheet and it has a gold bow on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what was going to reveal the gender.
Yeah. So it was tic-tac-toe and I wanted to do something that was really like fun and different. And so, and I wanted my kids to be involved.
Yeah.
I really wanted our kids to be involved. And when we were pregnant with Hendrix, we did the eggs. Like Henley smashed an egg on Hendrix's
Hendrix's on Doug's head. That would have been weird.
Oh, man.
She smashed the eggs on there. And, you know,
or on my head. I think, did she smash my head too? Or just
I think
yours?
She tried. I think it was just mine. Because they were hard-boiled eggs, and then whichever color was the regular egg, it would have splattered.
Yeah.
Henley stopped. She stopped and didn't want to do one egg.
Oh, that's
right. And that was the egg. That was a blue egg Jamie smashed on my head.
Your head then? Because you have a good memory. This is why we video everything. And I'm so thankful to have YouTube, because if we didn't have YouTube, I feel like it would all just be like in files we could never find on our computer.
Yeah.
But YouTube, we actually put it up and make it into a nice video. And I'm like, I can go back and watch that now.
Yeah. And I didn't know how the tic-tac-toe was going to be, because it was in my head, I was thinking, like, are they playing tic-tac-toe? How could that even be? How could that predict anything? But it was set up where, like, a tic-tac-toe board. And then there was all these, like, circle cutouts that were pinned up against each of the little squares.
Yeah, I mean, so Scott, Ruth's husband.
Yes, did a phenomenal job.
I mean,
painted everything white.
Yeah.
And behind these circle cutouts was either pink or blue. So the kids went up one by one, and they would take the circle cutout off, flip it over, and it would have a color, and then they would put it back onto the little notch in that square.
Yeah.
And then whatever color made a full three in a row, that was the gender.
Yeah. And it was so amazing. Oh.
We haven't even said it yet.
Yeah, we haven't said it yet, but I'm sure that if you've seen my Instagram, then you probably already know. But if you don't know, because you're new to Hot Marriage, Cool Parents, and maybe us all together,
it's a boy.
But there's another one in there. So we have one boy, and then we still don't know the second one.
I know. We only got to know one.
So what happens was that we did sneak peek. It's like amazing. I got it right from Walgreens. It's a very early gender reveal kit. So, and like, I have friends who've done it, and it was so accurate.
Yeah. I even took it to the post office, and the woman that checked it in, she was like, oh, sneak peek. I used that twice. And it was spot on twice.
Yeah.
Now, anybody that's thinking of sneak peek, read the directions.
Because yeah.
If a man or male breathes on the test or gets near it, or if there's a hair follicle, you can't touch any. I wasn't allowed in the room for when Jamie was doing this.
Well, not really.
Test.
You were in the room, but I didn't let him even come close to me. I was like, no. And I like washed.
Yes,
I like
because
washed
the male,
my bedside.
Yeah.
Just in case he touched it.
Because the male gene would show up as dominant. And
yeah.
And so.
But I don't think we explained it. Wait, so let me explain it better. So basically you take the test, and it's looking for the male chromosome to see if there's any male chromosome at all. Then you know, usually if it's just a one baby in your belly, then you would know that then it's a boy, unless it was like tainted by your spouse.
Right.
But I have many friends who've done it, and like they swore that it worked out. But yeah, so if it's a girl, if no male chromosome shows up, then it's obviously a girl. And so same thing for twins. If there's a boy, then you know at least one is a boy, but you don't know the second one. It could be a girl or a boy.
Yeah.
Because it's not like it can't differentiate, essentially. And so then
my surprise was that I thought we would have to wait until an ultrasound picked up the genitalia. But that's
I
not
did
the
too.
Case.
But I took an NIPT test.
And apparently.
Oh, excuse me. I'm so nauseous. And you know when?
Are you okay?
Nauseous and you burp. Ugh, it's the worst. TMI, and probably just gross to even hear someone talk about. Sorry.
Was,
oh, stop. That wasn't. Are you kidding me? I'm drinking water. I barely had anything to eat. He's like wiping his nose like that. My burp stunk. Like, that's disgusting, Doug.
I'm just kidding. They didn't see it.
That's not even funny. And yes, they could have.
Well, on the video,
anyways.
Yeah.
All right. Anyways, so.
You took the test.
I took the test.
And it was a blood test.
And it can differentiate whether or not our babies are fraternal or identical. It's the only blood test, actually, that can differentiate. It's really not meant for gender or differentiating whether or not your babies are identical or fraternal. Those are just like some amazing perks. It's really meant to help you get a heads up if there's any like issues with the baby. So
because that would show up in your blood.
Somehow, I don't, you know what? The science is like really beyond me.
Yeah.
And I worked in labor and delivery, not maternity. And I feel like
that's crazy.
People always think nurses just know everything about everything, but it's like I studied giving birth and immediately after, and that, and I focused hardcore in that area. I didn't study maternity, like the pregnancy of it. So anyways, I don't know a whole lot about NIPT. I just know that it can detect issues with the babies, and it can tell you the gender. And so
paternal
anyways,
or identical.
Yes, yeah. So
when do we find that out?
I don't know. On Monday, which by the time you're hearing this, it's going to be at least Wednesday. So I'll have had another doctor's appointment.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping maybe they'll have the answers and I can have them put it in an envelope. Because
we want to do another one.
I totally want to do another. Yeah. Are you kidding me? What? This is the joy of life.
It really is.
This is the joy of life. Like, how often do you get pregnant with twins?
And then get to do two gender reveals.
Yeah, because you get to find out one and not the other. That's like kind of cool.
Yeah.
I mean,
what we didn't take account for was the kid's reaction.
Yeah.
Henley really wanted a girl.
She really wanted
and
girls.
You could tell. I mean, she wasn't crying at all. Like, she wasn't upset. But you could tell she was hoping for a girl. I mean, she's been saying
girl.
Yeah.
She actually, I think she did start to cry, Doug, because she said to me, it's not, she started wiping her eyes. I said, oh, honey. Oh. And she goes, I'm not crying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think she got a little embarrassed. I mean, I think it's
the photographer was crying, but it was because of the wind.
The photographer?
Yeah, the photographer's was tearing just because of the wind.
Yeah, maybe. She told me she wasn't crying, but I mean, I could just tell that her heart was a little broken because it said boy, and she...
She sometimes gets a little reserved when a lot of people are looking
she's
at her
not,
too, though.
She's not much into the spotlight. Hendrix on their hand.
Yeah.
Holy moly, that boy's like dancing. So the whole, you know, all of our guests are standing... You know, kind of like
horseshoe
around
us.
Yeah, like watching the tic tac toe game happen. And Hendrix is just such a ham and puts on a show. Yeah. And Henley's kind of like hiding behind me, like, I don't really want anyone
to
be watching me.
She just wanted to play with her kite.
Yeah, and play in the sand and hang out with her friends. But it was an amazing gender reveal.
It was pretty awesome.
I'm super pumped for our guest today.
Yeah, we have Seth coming on.
Yes.
And for many of you that have been following us, you've heard the name Diana before.
Oh, I'm sure you've heard Diana
Diana. So this is her husband, Seth, who has lived a very interesting life. Mm-hmm. They currently homeschool their kids. They were home parents. They're certified foster parents. He's a youth pastor. So he's going to be... we're going to be chatting with him in a little bit. But before we get to him, I do have a 5-star review from Dana Niu 18. This one's a 4-part review. So it says, Jamie, thank you for sharing that. You too deal with people who don't always lead with kindness. You're so bright and I feel that way about myself too. And my light can be dimmed from other people who choose to take advantage of my kind, easygoing side and treat me with low respect. I've been dealing with the challenges of letting go of thoughts that bring the worst out of me. My sports physical therapist was structurally saving me, but she had moments of subtly disregarding my dignity. When I addressed her about it, she told me it was a me problem. Thankfully, I found a new guy and he gives me baseline respect, but to let go of the frustration is a complete challenge. Lately, I've been channeling you through me to find personal control and power.
Oh, wow. That's just, that's like super duper. That's a lot. Yeah. And honestly, you know, it's the biggest thing I would say is that it's hard when you're used to just being a people pleaser and trying to always make everyone happy. So there's like two parts to this. Like, I still believe in taking full accountability for anything that like where I've done wrong. Like, I think that you'll never ever grow as a human being if you don't. If you can't look back at a situation where you're feeling uncomfortable or angry or mad, you know, if you can't look back and be like, did I contribute to that in any way, shape, or form? And if I did, how could I change my behavior to be better in the future? So I always think that it's really important to do that. However, after like giving that like a good analysis, and this is where a therapist, and this is why I love therapy, is really helpful, because then you can go to someone outside the box of whatever the equation is and be like, this is what happened. This is how I feel. I'm angry as F. Mm-hmm. And then can you just help me maybe figure out if maybe I could have acted a little differently, or maybe I'm, you know, can you validate my feelings and let me know, that you were treated poorly and you shouldn't stand for that. And you can put a boundary up. Yeah. And so,
but also how to deal with the thoughts that come into your head immediately, you know, when, cause something with Tony Robbins too, when you start to learn, it's like, you know, that feeling, that sinking feeling, that angry feeling, that everything is against you feeling, once you start to recognize that and can sort of flip in your head and think about it more analytically, step outside yourself and sort of calm yourself down, it gives you a different perspective, makes you take different choices. Because sometimes when you make choices out of anger or fear, they're not always the right choices. When you can sit on it and not make a decision or not be rash, I think is also one of those ways.
Yeah.
But also, you know, the hard part too is once you set those boundaries, though, with those types of people, it's not easy in
they
the
don't
beginning
like it.
Because it's not going to be received well by everybody.
Let me tell you, when you start setting boundaries, you're going to lose some friends and you're going to lose some family members that, like, you're going to lose their support because they're used to you just being very agreeable and like doing anything that they want and all these things. And so
or
it's
they can
hard.
Make changes, you know, too.
And
you know?
But I got to tell you from personal experience, a lot, like, they don't make changes. They don't like you changing. People don't like change. And it takes someone to like really love you and respect you to be like, I see that you're making changes. You're trying to live a healthier lifestyle. I want to support that in you. I understand if you can't assist me with X, Y, or Z or come over to do whatever or meet me or talk to me or whatever the case is. So it takes a lot, but honestly, I really can't talk enough about having a good therapist or at least a really good friend who understands that you're trying to start set boundaries who can support you. Yep. What was the number two there?
Yep. So number two is what are your Myers-Briggs personality types? My guess is Jamie is an ENFP and Doug is an ISFJ. We won't go too deep into this, but I've taken many of personality tests and types, and Myers-Briggs was part of some of the interviews.
Well, what are you? Are you ISFJ?
ENTP.
You are that?
Yeah, I'm ENTP.
Are you kidding me?
I don't know if you're ENFP. But I'm definitely not. So ISFG is kind of like introverted, detail-oriented, regimented.
I wonder if you were to take the test now, if it would be different. Because I don't see you as extroversion. Is your first thing.
Well, I used to be, and I'm coming out of that now. I would say I'm extra. I mean, you kind of have to be extroverted to do a podcast. And
yeah, but you know, this is so vulnerable and so personal.
Yeah.
But I feel like you wouldn't necessarily get vulnerable like that only up until recently.
Right.
Like it would be like me pulling out of you to be like, Doug, it's okay. Like you can talk about it kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm like, I don't really see you. And like when we're at parties and gatherings, actually the first thing that anybody ever says when they come into our lives, like for example, Ruth and Diana, when they started working with us full time and being in our home and being around us, is they'll say, I didn't realize Doug is so shy. I didn't realize Doug is so quiet. I didn't realize. Yeah, that's the first thing everybody ever says. And I said, oh yeah. Like you are very like life of the party on camera and on the podcast and stuff, like, you know, like, and that's not like, it's not like you're a different person or something, but it's like in small settings, like you're just not like overly gregarious or boisterous or anything like that.
There is a little nostalgia. Because that's how I used to be.
Yeah.
And, as of like recently, like I feel broken out of that part of it.
I mean, I do see that without a doubt to just kind of, it's clear as day to me what happened is like you finally shared your deepest, darkest secret in all of its entirety.
Yeah.
And you let that skeleton out of the closet and now all of a sudden you're like a different man. You're just incredible. Like you're 10 times happier. Mm-hmm. You're 10 times more outgoing. You seem more comfortable with yourself and less like unsure yourself. And I don't think I never knew that side of you.
Yeah.
Ever until like now, 10 years later, married.
And that's the thing is like, I always used the excuse of my drug use and being sheltered and everything else, you know, like that caused me to sort of just become reserved and be into my own self. But I also use that as an excuse for so long to say, I've been sheltered for so long, so it's hard for me to come out, or it's hard for me to do this and hard for me to do that. When, you know, like after, like Tony Robbins, that thing
that was really,
really
breakthrough, a very big breakthrough for you.
Because it was like, you realize that that part never goes away. Like that never goes away. It's always still inside you.
What part? What are you talking about?
The part before I started using drugs and hiding myself.
Yeah. Like you're not like, that's the real you.
That, yeah. And so that part, I wasn't trying to hide that part.
Yeah.
But I didn't know, I never had a path to find that part of me again.
Yeah.
Until I started like breathing and meditating and, you know, just really thinking about it and then expressing and just getting everything off, which was nice. And I have you to thank for that.
You're welcome.
I really do.
Yeah. I feel like I just knew Tony Robbins would be so good for not just you, but for both of us. If I wasn't so darn sick and nauseous the whole time,
I know.
I think I would have enjoyed it a little more.
I really took it serious.
Yeah, I know. And I'm thankful you did, because Tony Robbins is not cheap. Let me just tell you, but he's also very good at what he does, and he deserves to charge whatever he wants to charge, because it really was a profound breakthrough.
And it was like a video Zoom.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, But anyway,
interesting to hear. I have no idea. I've actually never taken a Myers-Briggs test, so I don't have any idea what I would be.
We can look it up at a different time if you want.
Yeah, cool.
So that was part two. So part three, Doug, I love sports too. I can totally see you being your kid's team coach. The patience and ability to not react is inspiring.
Agreed, because I don't have either one of those qualities, let's be honest.
Yes.
I like react way too fast, and then I regret it. And patience.
You have patience.
I would say you've always been more patient. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, like, there's no. But
I can admit that.
Yeah, but you know, you do have some. You have patience. Yeah. Like, with the kids and stuff.
Well, no, but I do. But you definitely have more.
Yeah, I do. I do want to be a coach.
I could totally see you coaching for sure.
Now, number four. I'm a gay single woman. However, your values as a couple is my goal to get to.
Aww.
I get a little turned off when God is implied to be a he, but I understand the concept of faith and being driven by the faith in our hearts. Keep pumping me up with faith, Jamie and Doug. And if you want him to be a he or she, you know, whatever's in your heart, I think you follow your heart.
Yeah.
We're not here to judge. You know, it's up to you.
I totally agree. And honestly,
and thank you for that 4-part review.
Yeah, that was really amazing. So amazing and so thorough and so sweet. And now you have me wanting to know what Myers-Briggs personality I am. I have a guess that ISFJ stands for introvert something else. And I could see why she thought that of you because
we've been talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's also kind of intriguing that she kind of figured that out about you because most people do think that you're an extroverted person, and really, and maybe you are, and you're coming back to that. But as long as I've ever known you, at parties, you like just go play with the kids. Like you're not really trying to, make friends. Even you don't even ever want to make a friend. You're like, I have enough friends. I don't need to make friends.
I know.
You'd always say
that. I was like that for so long.
You would always say that. And I'm like,
friends. I don't need more friends.
Does anybody say they have enough friends? They don't need more friends. I'm like, God bless the people that feel like they have enough friends. They don't need more friends. Like I feel like I could never have enough friends.
Until I started making new friends.
Yeah. I hope one day, you know what? That's not like, I also remember, a friend's mom who's older, and she said that her life is so full with her kids and her friends and her family that she doesn't try to make friends or like keep in touch with them, like new people she met. And I was like, imagine that, having your life so full with so many great people that you don't really go out of your way to try to make a friend. Or I'm like, I couldn't even fathom that.
No.
Because I've never had that.
No, I mean, that's, I think it also depends on what kind of field you're in.
What do you mean?
Like occupation wise.
Well, she's retired. I think she was a stay-at-home mom.
I know.
Like, so imagine being a stay-at-home mom which I feel like a lot of stay-at-home moms feel very isolated because they're just with kids all day.
Yeah.
And just imagine that, having like enough family and friends. But I wonder sometimes if it is just a crutch because you're just too scared to go out and make friends.
I used it as a crutch for a long time.
I mean, you definitely used it as a crutch because I know you have really great friends, but it's not like you would see them.
No.
You never saw them. They'd come to every event and they're amazing. We love them, but we live far away. So it's not like you got to see them.
I know.
But anyways.
It was always, I don't know. It's like when you have the type of friends that like, You can go a little bit without speaking to them. You can text, everything else. But then when you get together,
no time has passed.
No time has passed. You know, but there's been more time that has passed, obviously, with my childhood friends than I would have liked. But you know, that's just the reality. But we do get together. On occasion. I haven't seen them all in a while, but
yeah, well, we live in Florida now, so that makes it a little more difficult, but I'm excited to bring on our guest. I'm going to get out of here so that Seth, as our kids call him, Uncle Seth.
Yeah.
I know he used to be Mr. Seth.
His kids just called me Uncle Doug.
He's so sweet. Yeah. So you know, what's so great, last thing before I leave, and just one thing that is so great is that, you know, Diana, so I don't know if you know the story of how Diana and I met, but she was, this is like literally 8 years ago now, maybe 9 years ago now. She was,
do you know the backstory to that?
To what?
To her reaching out to you?
Well, yeah. What? She ordered jewelry for me, but she ordered it for someone else.
No, that wasn't the backstory.
What's the backstory?
So Seth told this in full for me hearing it for the first time. So yes, she did buy jewelry from you.
Yeah.
And you wrote her an email back saying, you know, whatever.
Thank you.
Diana had this feeling and in her mind, she got this thought that she expressed to Seth saying, I don't know what it is.
Are you kidding me right now?
But I feel like I need to reach out to her. This was after Jonathan. I feel like I need to reach out to her and show some support. And I don't know how she's going to receive this or what, but I feel like I need to reach out to her to let her know that there are people that she loves you and supports you for what you're doing.
That is so sweet. You know what? I think Diana, for some reason in my head.
And she like wrote you something or maybe sent you an email, but that was her telling Seth saying she felt the need to reach out to you.
That's really wild because in my head, it was a woman who bought my jewelry to support. Honestly, she bought a piece of jewelry to send to these cancer kids, like these kids that had cancer in a hospital. And I was like, how'd she even get their address? Like, how'd she know what room they're in? I was like, that's pretty cool. And I was like, well, geez, if you're sending them jewelry, I'll send them my book because I don't know. You just want to.
But wasn't it her friend?
She actually bought more than one piece. And I just remember her so well because like, even back then I was like, wow, this girl's buying another piece of jewelry now. And I was like, and I didn't have time. I was working as a nurse and I was just so overworked. We were shooting the show and I was like so overworked. So I reached out to her and I said, oh, this piece of jewelry, I'm not going to be able to ship as fast. I'm really sorry. And she said, oh, do you need any help with anything? And I was like, what? Like that is like an odd thing to say. Yeah. And honestly, I guess I assumed she was a girlfriend. Yeah. And I know that she wasn't necessarily a super fan because she did tell me that later on. She was like, no, I was never really a super fan. Yeah. She's like,
she just started watching it.
Yeah. Randomly. And I didn't even know that. I mean, there's nothing wrong. There's many super fans that I've become good friends with, but, anyways, I just thought she was one of them. And then, needless to say, she started working for me for free. And I've shared this story so many times because it's pretty profound. At the time I was working as a nurse and we were living in New Jersey. I didn't have any money. I mean, you think you make some money on reality TV. You really don't make any money. And we made, in full transparency, did we make $15,000 each for Married at First Sight? I'm pretty sure that's how much we made.
One?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot of work to be honest. I mean, you're just working 24/7 and it's gone that fast. So needless to say, I didn't have any money. I was trying to grow my jewelry business and this woman says, oh, I can help you. And I was like, okay. And I remember saying to Doug, I'm going to give her my website information. And Doug was like, what are you, crazy? And I was like, if she burns it, I don't even care because I'm so overwhelmed. And she was so trustworthy and always has been so trustworthy. But I was like, she started kind of like working a lot for free for me. And I was like, I'm just not okay with that. Like, I will always want to pay someone, because I don't like feeling like I owe someone something, or like feeling like, I just didn't like it. I just want to be able to, like, you shouldn't work for free for someone. You really just shouldn't. And so I was like, you know what? I am going to stop working with you, but when I have a job where I can pay you, like when I make enough money and I can actually pay you for helping me, I'm going to find you and hire you again. And I don't even know that I actually even said that to her. I just had it in my head, because I was like, she's so trustworthy and so reliable and just so kind and hardworking and figure anything out. But I was like, I can't just let her keep working for me. And at this point, you had lost your job. We were living with your parents. And I remember we were, Diana and I were trying to figure out how to like stage my jewelry to take pictures and stuff. And I was like, I just felt so much stress. I was working other jobs as well. Like I was back at the hospital working. I was at a new hospital, I should say, the one in New Jersey. I was working for—
Which was per diem, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I was working a lot because I was trying to save up money so we could get our first house. And you had— at this point, no, you hadn't lost your job, but you had over $50,000 in debt. It's a whole lot.
We were trying to save for,
well, we put a down payment on a house. Well, we tried to, and then we found out that you had a judgment. And so against you. So instead of the money that we were going to use for the down payment, we had to pay your judgment and we moved in with your parents so that we could resave the money for a down payment on a house. And the same time that we're living with your parents, I'm like, Diana's like working for free for me, and it just felt so wrong, and I just didn't like it. And I was like, you know what? And I kind of put the jewelry business on the side anyways. I was like, you know, like it was a lot of work to create that jewelry, and I didn't really make a ton of money with it. And so I had to put it on the side and just work more at the hospital. And needless to say, this is a long backstory for you listening. But I ended up, once we started the podcast, we needed to hire someone to help us edit it. And I was like, I know the perfect person. And I said, and not like she has ever edited a podcast a day in her life, but I said, hey, Diana, I think I have a job for you. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, do you know, we're starting this podcast and we really need an editor. The girlfriend just goes out there. Mm-hmm. She figures out how to do it. She did it better than anybody.
Yep.
And she was just amazing.
And then we were like, we kind of don't need an editor anymore. So we're going to put this on hold for a little bit. And then after, I think it was like two or three episodes,
we were like, Diana,
we can't, I can't.
Never mind.
This. Yeah.
We'll take you back, please. And so the cool thing on her end is what she's told me is that every time that I've reached out to be like, hey, you know, can we pay you to edit or whatever? Mm. And then she'll say, like, those were times that she could use the extra money. And so it was always kind of like very much a mutually beneficial type relationship. Mm. And so then, long story short, after a few years of her just being consistently reliable, loving, kind, generous, like patient, just so great, like just so amazing. And I'm like, who, like, what kind of a unicorn are you? Like, how is there someone like this in this world? Because I have yet to meet people like that.
Yeah.
Usually someone will burn you eventually, you know?
Someone who loves people.
Yeah. And she just consistently will forever take the shirt off her back for anybody who needs it. But anyways, so she, I needed someone to help me like start managing contracts and negotiating and things like that. And I was like, you know, ask Diana.
Can you step up?
Yeah. And not only that, then she started learning how to like help me make reels and she would edit some of our YouTube videos. I mean, she's just really, truly a unicorn. And her husband he's a youth pastor, and they've always had a heart to help others. I mean, they're just like really, like, I'm like, people like this exist in the world.
I know.
And the interesting thing about it, and to speak to point number four about keep pumping me up with faith. The interesting thing about it is that she's a Christian. And at the time I've always been a Christian, but I never like really went to church. I really wasn't praying or like believe, like counting on God or like seeking God or anything like that. But she never pushed me to be like any sort of way. Doug's telling me to wrap it up. So anyways, needless to say,
long story short,
I always say the same thing, but it's just amazing when you can find someone in your life that isn't going to burn you. And when you do that, like, don't let them go and take good care of them. And
just be there for them as much as they're there for you.
All right. Well, let's get her husband on.
Yeah. So we are welcoming for the very first time on this podcast, Mr. Seth Teagarden.
What's up, dude? Look at that. We got sound effects and everything.
Wow.
So Jamie gave a quick rundown of explaining who you are,
mm-hmm.
And what you guys mean to our family,
mm-hmm.
And kind of how the whole progression of Diana working and then coming into each other's lives. And we've really, really appreciated all that you guys have done, especially, you know, Diana just being there. And we were always saying, you know, like, how are there people out there like this that consistently serve and look to help people? And because especially Jamie, the way that she grew up, it was always, you know, someone, if they were nice to you, they were expecting something in return.
That's right.
Or,
that's right.
You know, like they were looking to stab you in the back. I didn't necessarily have that experience. I always try to look for the best in people, and stay positive. And I do believe people can change. But you guys have really, really lived a life of serving. And I just wanted to kind of chat a little bit about that.
Yeah.
You know, maybe say kind of tell how you got into the college and then going into the group home and things like that. Just kind of telling that story.
So I think the first thing I you know, you bring up this point about, you know, people that are their servants and, you know, that it feels like there's not a lot of people like that. And I think two things. One, I think that there's a lot more out there. And, you know, maybe this is an encouragement to people that, like, put yourself out there a little bit, you know.
For sure.
But on the flip side, unfortunately, it feels like the world is becoming more and more self-centered, right? There's a lot more me-centered, self-gratification, immediate. And we need to have more people that step up and genuinely just want to serve and love others. And so, you know, for Diana and I, it is genuinely a privilege when we get to do that for other people, you know, genuinely. And I mean, now
it's really admirable.
But at the same time, it's, you know, it's almost a little selfish, right? Because for us, we like it is self-gratifying, like us being able to love on people and serve them and put other people first. Like it's, it is the reward in of itself. Right.
Sure.
And so, anyway, it's kind of a,
well, I mean, it's also the difference between like not expecting anything
that's
in return.
100%.
You know, 100%. Like you could say it's selfish, but you know, when you're not expecting it in return, I think it just shows your true heart is in the right place.
Yeah.
And then you recently became a youth pastor. You went obviously to school, for that. And then, so were you working in the church before you and Diana were in that group home?
Or no? Yes and no. So I'll kind of give you the quick rundown. Yep. Yeah. So, I'll run through real quick. So I grew up in a pretty conservative Christian home, just north of Atlanta, Georgia. And really from the time I was a kid all the way through what ended up being through college, but, you know, being in church and that kind of stuff was a part of our lives. And
but your dad worked in the church.
Dad worked a full-time job, regular full-time job, but he was pretty involved in what we did at church, part of leadership team, that kind of stuff. So I was around it. My mom was a teacher at our Christian school where I went. And so it was part of our daily lives. Right. So anyway, I knew from a young age that I wanted to be a part of that on some level. I think it started with seeing my dad and his love for people and what he did behind the scenes. I wanted to be a part of that. And so I knew all throughout going through high school, that being in ministry of some kind or something like that was something I wanted to do. And so I started pursuing what college might look like to do that, and ended up going to a small little Bible college just north of Knoxville, Tennessee. And while I was at school there, met Diana, not at that school. We got married right before my senior year. Diana and I actually knew each other, you know, from back in kindergarten.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, we knew each other from in kindergarten. And then my family moved to the other side of Atlanta. And so our families knew each other. And Diana and I knew of each other, but weren't, you know, we reconnected.
Gotcha,
in college. And so she was a year ahead of me. We get married. So now here I am, senior in college, in Bible college, getting ready to graduate. I'm married. Diana's got a job working. I think she had started working at a daycare. And was looking for a second job just to do, you know, she basically had all this time to herself, and she was good. I was still in school and I was working. And so
It was the craziest thing. Some friends of mine from school had started working at this children's home in north of Knoxville, and we knew nothing about it. Diana was like, hey, I think I'm going to go check that out.
Yeah.
Come to find out, this was a home for troubled kids that were also autistic. So you had to be on the spectrum as well as have a severe behavioral disability to be accepted in this home. So they lived there. So Diana did that for a long time, worked at this home, which then led me to getting a job working for the same company at a sister home about an hour away. And so both Diana and I, early on in our marriage, began working with troubled kids.
Wow.
And then our first daughter was born, and Diana stepped back from working, and I continued doing this. And at the time, I was a supervisor at the group home, and so I sort of maintained staff and then relationships with kids, but really sort of on a higher level, maintaining the staff and building relationships with the staff and helping that translate down to the kids. And
stuff, now, when you say these homes and certain kids qualify to get in, Do they have parents? Are they foster kids or?
So in this home where we first started out as, you know, 20, 21 year old kids, really, just out of college, in this particular home, these were kids that were state ordered to be where they were.
Okay.
And so these were kids that, most of them, these were not actually foster kids. These were kids that
just
were
troubled
kids. Right. And, had been in and out of a lot of them had been out of juvie multiple times, and this was sort of a last resort, right? Mm-hmm. So through that, our eyes opened to like this wide world of there's a problem, and yeah. And we want to be part of that problem, part of the solution, right?
Let's contribute to that problem.
But what we saw was by the time the kids got to where we were, the reality was, and you know, look, I believe that like you said earlier, anybody can change, and I think circumstances can bring that. The reality was that by the time the kids got to that point, it was almost
small caveat to that. So, what I mean by change is grow.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Jamie and I have this conversation a lot, and we'll get back to that. But Jamie and I have this conversation a lot about, you know, people, like especially some people, whether it's in our family, mm-hmm. Where you hold on to this grudge for so long, you hold on to this grudge, and then anything that person does, is the annoyance is just amplified.
Yeah.
No matter what, whether there's good intentions, bad intentions, you know, if that person may not know though, you know, like if you don't tell that person that this is bothering you, or you take umbrage with this, or you thought that this was being disrespectful, that person doesn't know.
Yeah.
When you give that knowledge, that person can grow. Mm-hmm. You can grow.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, it does change you. I'm not saying people can ultimately change. I'm saying people can grow.
That's right.
I truly believe that.
Yep. Yep. Totally agreed. The unfortunate reality that we felt was when the kids got to that point that we were with them, it was sort of maintaining, right? And it felt like we were beating our heads against a wall to try to help when it felt like everything was standing against us.
Yeah.
And so we really started praying about what those next steps might be for us, and where we might use the knowledge we had gained doing that work with this first children's home.
Was there any ministry as part of that?
So
any sort of, when you say prayer,
yeah.
Was that received by these kids or?
So at this place, yes and no. So where we worked, this was a state-run organization, which we were very respectful of, right?
Okay.
And so basically the rules were we could answer questions, right? If a kid has a question, I'll answer that question. It was, you know, most of the kids, you get to know the kids, right? So they knew, you know, I had just graduated from Bible college. They knew that was sort of a part, right? But I wasn't like preaching to them, if that makes sense.
Gotcha.
You know?
Okay.
Now the kids also had an opportunity on Wednesday nights to go to church. We could take them there. But it was, at the end of the day, it was, like I said, it was a state-run organization. So we maintained, you know, those rules. And again, we're very respectful.
There were boundaries.
That's right. Okay. That's right. And so they, you know, I would tell them, you know, I'm praying for you, but those conversations were mostly pretty limited.
Yeah.
And so it was sort of some of those things that led Diana and I to say, well, how might we use our interest in ministry and maybe in a different way? We started praying how those skills might translate. Diana came home one day. She had been out with Callie, and I was home from work. And she said, "You know," she said, "Seth, I think I figured something out." She said, "You know, you've got a degree in ministry, and I, you know, also." So she went to school for counseling, biblical okay. counseling. And she said, "I've wanted to do something in ministry." And she said, "Neither of us thought about kids. And now all of a sudden we've had, you know, this year and a half of experience working with yeah. kids." She goes, "Maybe there's such a thing as a Christian children's home." And I remember kind of like laughing and be like, "Wow, if that existed, that would be really cool."
Yeah.
And little did I, you know, again, I grew up in this Christian environment and didn't know this was even a thing. So we started Googling it, right? What Christian children's homes? And we found hundreds and hundreds and hundreds
wow.
of them. Didn't even know it existed.
Yeah.
And so Diana was like, "Wow, let's start applying."
Yeah.
So really just out of nowhere, we start just finding these, you know, random homes. And we sort of targeted, at the time we were in Knoxville. And so we targeted like Knoxville to Greenville, South Carolina to Atlanta, sort of that tri-city yeah. region, and hit all of them. And now keep in mind, we were 22 years old with an 8 month old. Well, she would have been about 6 months or so yeah, when we started wow. applying. Again, kids, clueless, right? Mm-hmm. Clueless kids. And, but we were passionate about what we wanted to do. And, long story short, we had several interviews, and the final place that really looked appealing was a place called Thornwell Home for Children in South Carolina, and a tiny little town called Clinton, South Carolina. And, it's smack dab in between Greenville and Columbia. But they called us, and we went over there and did a pretty extensive interview, which should be for that
yeah,
type
for
of work.
Sure.
And so we ended up moving there and spent right around 3 years at this children's home. And so what this looked like, and this is sort of the question we get all the time, like, mm-hmm. What does that mean? What does that look like? And so as 22-year-olds with an 8-month daughter, we moved into this home where our full-time job, this is the other thing, you know, people think this was just an extra thing. This was our full-time job,
full-time.
Right? So we got paid, although, you know, it's ministry. So you're, yeah. you know, it's your
ministry.
That's pay. Right. That's right. Yeah. So we got paid. Part of that pay compensation was also housing package, right? So we had housing provided for us, but our job was to be parents to these kids, period. And so we had 8 at this home. This organization structured it. They had different homes for different genders and age groups, which the way that there was in this environment worked well. Yeah. They had 10 or 12 different homes when we were there. And so our home was middle school girls. It was elementary to middle school girls. So we had anywhere from kindergarten to 8th grade. And so it was big. Now the home we went to later was the whole gamut, 5 years old to 18, but, wow. But this first one we were at was kindergarten to 8th grade. And we had 8 girls all the time. There was, and that was like if one girl moved out, it was within a week, maybe less, that you had somebody else come in. Unfortunately, you know, there's a waiting list type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, there's such a need for these homes. So
was this another state required thing or?
Like a state funded.
Was there qualifications to get into the home?
Yeah. So this particular home was a private run home. As far as qualifications, yeah. So we had to pass for, you know, the organization itself, like we had, you know, to be accepted there. And it was a pretty rigorous process to get in there. And then as a part of being there, then we also had to be accepted as, we had to go through like foster parent training and stuff through the state of South Carolina. To make sure that we were, you know, verified, because the kids that we got, a bunch of them were in the foster care system.
Okay.
Not all of them,
right?
Not all the time, but because we had kids that were in the foster care system, we had to be certified.
Now, were they still in the foster care system
when they got to us?
Yeah,
some of them, yeah.
Okay,
yeah, not all.
Okay, meaning that they just haven't been adopted or may not be adopted. Is that
so? Again, every case is different, but the majority were, you know, mom and dad for whatever reason were unfit to currently have those kids.
Makes sense.
And so, and in most states, in state of South Carolina at that time, the premise was always reconciliation with the parents. That was always a reunification.
Okay.
Yeah, it was always the goal, even then the goal was still reunification at some point. Mm. But we're gonna, you know, what can we do to help the parents get from point A to point B? And so, actually our organization was part of that training process. So we got to host those trainings for those parents, which gave us a really cool opportunity to not just parent the kids, but also as parents to these kids, build relationships with the parents. And
sure.
So here you've got, you know, mom and dad who, you know, a lot of times are strung out on drugs or have a pretty serious substance abuse issues, or, you know, maybe it's even they just simply don't know how to love their kid. Maybe they never saw that growing up. And so they struggle with what it looks like to have proper boundaries and discipline and that type of thing. Yeah. And we got a chance to love those parents into those things.
And you're how old at this point?
Started at 22.
Still in your 20s.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And I'll say this one thing.
So you guys became parents, like,
we did. Yeah. Quickly. Yeah. We were thrown into it.
Crash course.
Yeah. 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 And, you know, I think one of the things that we were gifted with was the ability to sort of build relationships with adults pretty quickly, which, didn't come easy, right? Here, I'm a 22 year old kid and I've got your 10 year old that you can't parent. And then I'm trying to tell you how to do it. Yeah. Right. So, There was a real gentle way of going about that. Mm-hmm. And it involved, you know, imagine you've got these eight kids from all these different wild backgrounds, right? And now we're inviting some of those same parents back into our home and having meals with them and just building relationships, talking with them, walking them over to the training center where they can sit down and learn. And through that process, we got to see several of our kids reunify back with their mom and dad. And it was awesome, right? Yeah. It was really cool.
That's amazing. So, and then so from there, you know, what I guess as a parent, you learn so many different values, and it's a level of patience that not everybody
can for sure
that can have. I mean, I just thinking in my head, what do you feel you got out of that process the most?
Yeah, so I can look back now. So we were there for 3 years, took a break for a couple of years, and then ended up going back into doing the same thing again at another organization in South Atlanta. So for a total of 7 years, we did this work. And I can look back now and sort of take away some of the things that I've learned from that. So A, you know, I'm getting ready to raise a teenager myself. We have a 12-year-old. She got to grow up in that setting, right?
She was six, 7 months when we first started.
Yeah. And so, you know, until, you know, it was 3 years ago when we left that was all she had ever really known.
Does she remember any of it?
100%. Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. No, she talked about it all the time.
Yeah.
And so for me, what I learned was, and joking, I think I've told you this before, but there's not many situations that happen with teenagers that I haven't already dealt with, you know, and at 35, that's a leg up, right?
Yeah.
And so, good and bad. And, but really, I mean, I won't get into detail, but you can use your imagination, right? Any situation that could come up with a teenager,
violence, sex, pregnancy,
exactly.
You know,
all of those things.
I mean,
Substance abuse, you know, love, care, parental issues, all those things, right? Yeah. So
do you feel that there was one sort of unifying factor that sort of, you know, I know it's tough to say, like, you can save everybody or, you know, like, just help them, you know, was there, you know, depending on whether it was just someone that was just against authority or someone that would just consistently go back to either, you know, sex or drugs or anything, was there something that usually grabbed their attention for a little bit?
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
It was one word, Doug. Love.
Yeah.
One word.
Yeah.
And, doesn't mean it always worked every time.
Right.
But there's one thing that permeated those issues over and over. It was, and I sometimes tear up thinking about it because I see the eyes of these kids that we had and, knowing their stories and, getting to see in their eyes when they know, and you can tell when it clicks, when they know, when I say I love you, when they know you mean it.
Yeah.
And it's not day one.
That's pretty powerful.
Sometimes it's not till a year in.
Yeah.
But you do the same thing day in and day out over and over and over and over. And wasn't perfect, but we were pretty good about, so we held standards, pretty strict standards. But we worked really hard to never raise our voice, to never accuse unknowingly of something. Now, when it came back and it was time to handle it, like, we're going to handle it. But we worked really hard to not be accusatory of things before we had all the facts, to not act in anger or overreact in a situation, but keep a level head, which was not always easy when you're dealing with those types of things. And especially when it may or may not involve one of your biological children, and sort of how you keep a level head and all that, and make sure that those eight girls see themselves as part of the 10 children that you have, not eight and two. And so, which, you know, are two biological in those eight. So, so anyway, I would say, and this is not a Seth and Diana thing. I think it was genuinely something that the Lord has allowed us to do, but that being able to show love to a kid that felt like they didn't deserve it. And when you saw it click in their eyes that I know, and that, again, that doesn't mean that, you know, I think we've painted these tough pictures sometimes in movies that paint foster care and adoption. And at the end of the movie, everybody loves and hugs on each other. And it's a beautiful story. And we had some of those moments, but you know what happens the next day? They're angry again.
Yeah.
Right. They're frustrated. Something else happens. Like, that's not the end of the story. So it doesn't mean that in those moments where it clicks, it changes everything for good.
Yeah.
It means that there's been an opportunity now where they know there's something deeper.
Sure.
Right. So
something that they may not have ever had before.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, you were saying though, with your daughter.
So being able to now as a parent who's getting ready to raise a teenager,
yeah.
I mean, the biggest thing, right, is looking back on, and so all these years we had girls, which a lot of people look at me and just sort of laugh at, right? Like how, you know, and I've always said for us in our specific callings, like we worked with girls really, really, really well. You just sort of got used to it, right?
Yeah. That's why you're wearing a bun.
That's why I'm wearing a bun. That's right. That's why I've grown my hair out. So, but being able to raise quote unquote girls from 5 to 18 years old gave me a deep appreciation of what it meant to be a daddy and what it meant to be a girl dad. And I love my son.
Yeah.
But being able to raise my daughter in a way, in a world in which we live in now, where I can show her love and that she matters and that she's important, having seen the flip side of that in a really negative way,
for sure,
has been really powerful for Diane and I to be able to see.
And then has she expressed interest in that side, serving? Have you gotten them involved since at all?
So in terms of working with like a house parenting type thing or anything?
Yeah, not even house parenting, but just, you know, working in that sort of field.
I gotcha. So
I know it's tough for a 12-year-old to.
Well, maybe I'll answer it this way.
Sure.
So what we've seen in our daughter, really since she was really young until now, has been such a heart to just love other people. Mm-hmm. And honestly, man, we don't even have to put those things in front of her. She looks for opportunities where she can help out.
She's amazing.
Well, thanks to her mother.
Yeah.
That's 100%.
Well, and because you when you think of someone that went to Bible school, you know, a youth pastor, you know, when you meet you and your family, you're so open-minded and you're so aware of your surroundings. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've ever seen you, you know, push religion on anybody even towards your kids. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just so respectful in that manner. And it's just, I had a misconception about that for sure. You know, when Jamie first told me, Seth is a minister. He went to school for ministry. I'm thinking, I got to be on my best behavior. Like, it's going to be so hard, but it's totally not like that. And I really do think that, you know, I don't want to say it's a generational thing, but I appreciate how open you are, open-minded you are, and can see issues, and you still hold to your values.
That's right. That's right.
But you don't push that on people, and I really respect that and appreciate that.
Well, I think I'll credit her right now. Growing up, I saw my mom teach me how to hear other people's stories, how to hear other perspectives, and agree or disagree, but it's about seeing other people's sides, right? Seeing people where they are, seeing their perspective. At the end of the day, I don't think, should I say this in the right way? It's not for me to have to push a religion, because it encompasses me, right? Like, it's who I am. It's not what I'm selling.
Right.
It's it embodies me as a, it, like it is like we're one and the same, yeah. right? Who Christ is to me and my relationship with him is a whole thing. It's not something I'm trying to peddle to you.
Sure.
And my perspective is if I live in that way, mm-hmm. it will permeate into the world
yeah.
and it'll be visible.
And I, you know, I'm not even just saying with like religion. I just mm-hmm. think it's sort of a metaphor of how we can be just yeah. humans together.
Yeah. No,
you know, regardless exactly right. of politics, regardless of religion,
yeah.
you know, like there's a certain level of kindness that everybody has
yeah.
and can still have. And when we stop listening, when we start hard, you know, disagreeing and standing firm, yes, you can have your values. But when you start to lose respect of someone's opinion and respect, you know, I just see so many people disagreeing without the knowledge behind that thought or idea. You know, like I could disagree with you, but I don't know how you came up with that. You know, I don't know your upbringing. You know, I don't think there's enough of that where yeah. we can just respect people's opinions and not have hatred towards them.
Yeah.
No, dude. It's a really weird point where we are, where I see too much of it.
Well, there needs to be more of what you and I've gotten to do. Sit on a porch.
Yeah.
And
we
just
all
talk,
need to sit
right?
on a porch.
Sit on a porch and talk.
Yeah.
yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. So, and you know, I think what you'll find is A, you're going to disagree with people that you sit on a porch with, mm-hmm. but you're also going to find that there's a lot that you do agree about. And when
there's a lot you don't know about.
That's right. And then when you get to sit on the porch and just talk and listen, right? Listen.
Yeah.
And not just listen to speak, but listen to listen. Mm-hmm. You really see the nuances to those conversations
yeah.
that aren't as hard-nosed as maybe you once thought they were.
Yeah.
You know?
And so. I think that's a great place to end.
Yeah.
So, Seth, thank you.
Absolutely, man. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for watching. And again, if you haven't seen the YouTube video of our gender reveal, it is up on YouTube. So I encourage you to check that out. And be safe and be kind. And we love you. See ya.
Later.